The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to You're Making It Worse. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
We're here. We're queer.
Meh.
Textual healing.
Okay, so we have a new article to discuss this week. I want to first tell you that the URL of the article that Elliot sent us, which is apparently his new favorite blog, is garbageday.email.
Dot email. I didn't even know that wasn't available.
I had no idea either. I'd never heard.
No, that's because I sent it to you from the email newsletter. But it's this guy Ryan Broderick, who's like he kind of writes about the internet, and he's been around for a long time, and he just kind of catches everything. Yeah. He's great.
Yeah, and he did. I mean, look, God love him. God love Ryan Broderick. He did a great job, and his article is about, sort of a viral event. A Nebraska state senator, Bruce Bostelman, gave a speech in the Nebraska legislature about some rumor he had heard that school children were dressing up as animals, cats and dogs, meowing and barking, and then defecating in litter boxes housed in genderless bathrooms.
And I'm a little shocked, I guess, is what I would put it. It's called something called furries. If you don't know what furries are, it's where school children dress up as animals, cats or dogs, during the school day. They meow and they bark, and they interact with their school, with the teachers and that, in this fashion. And now schools are wanting to put litter boxes in the schools for these children to use. How is this sanitary? I'm going to have a discussion with CEO Smith about this. This is something I think, how can schools allow this to happen? I think it's very disruptive within the school system. I think it's very disruptive within the classes. I even heard from one person here recently said that a student identified as a cat and wanted a litter box, and the school didn't provide the litter box, so the student went ahead and defecated on the floor. Really? Really? School administrators, what is going on? Nebraska Department of Education, what is going on? State Board of Education, what is going on? If some kids can't wear American flag to walk through the school on their shirt, and you keep them out of school, and you kick them out of school, but it's okay if they wear a cat costume, and that's fine, and you have a litter box for them, and that's fine.
So the author of the story, Ryan Broderick, does his best to trace the roots of this obviously nonsensical story. And it all started with some untruths posted on either 4chan or Facebook about a school refusing to supply litter boxes in bathrooms, which in turn got picked up by the New York Post. A couple weeks later, a separate event occurred where some furries helped crowdsource money for a library in Arkansas that was refused funding for containing LGBT books. From there, the two were sort of conflated, and it spiraled subsequently. And now recently a gubernatorial candidate tweeted, quote, the furry days are over when I'm governor. That was psycho in Georgia. So from there, the furry panic has spiraled all over TikTok, Reddit, and some very right-wing enclaves.
You know what this reminded me of? Like, I don't know if you guys ever really experienced this, but like in the 90s, but whenever they would talk about anti-gay stuff, or there would be like some sort of anti-gay thing, they would bring up NAMBLA, what is it called?
Sure.
You know what I'm talking about?
North American Man Boy Love Association.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And they would always bring, it was like, especially in 2004, I remember during the whole marriage thing, like when George W. Bush was pushing the amendment to the Constitution for marriage, and then all these states were doing it. They would always bring that up. And I always was like, that's so laughable, because that's
not what being gay is. That's being a,
but they were trying to paint that. Exactly. And this course, what this, that's what this feels like to me.
Well, I was actually going to say this, what this reminded me, I feel like, I mean, I've definitely heard that connection made before, Alan, you're absolutely right. But I feel like
I know I am
from the you know what, in that case, I take it back. You're wrong. From the 2000s on, the right wing was a little bit more moral and humanist about it. They would only compare gay marriage with marrying animals and bestiality. Yeah. And that was a really
What's
common
next?
Trope.
You're going to marry your dog?
You're going to marry your dog. Well, you're going to marry a box turtle. Yeah. Yeah.
And this was a lot. I mean, this was essentially tied to like trans panic. They were, right. They were really kind of using this story, even though it's a non-story. It's a sort of lore combined, chaotically combined from separate events on the internet, brought into like GOP politics, but they're basically using it to equate furries and gender roles in children. Mm-hmm. You know, they're basically trying to connect those two things. They're making like furries and litter boxes into like the next step beyond children having the opportunity to, you know, decide their own gender or consider whatever hormones or surgery, mm-hmm. or just the actual, you know, the trend of kids being, you know, gender non-binary or whatever. That is the thing they're trying to connect here.
It's the queer boogeyman.
Yes.
It's what it is. Yeah. It's like, it's them trying to get votes, trying to remain relevant while at the same time go viral and get lots of followers. And what's the way to do that? Have insane, insane theories in order to rile people up, just like what happened during the 2020 election with Trump and talking about fraud in the election. Let's just go out all these conspiracy theories and really blow people. And there's a great New York Times article today, actually, about that, about how people were so influenced by these kind of stories that are absurd.
Yeah.
I don't really understand.
Then again, the New York Times is a little left of Lenin. sorry, well, Elliot, go ahead.
Keep the gate, too.
Yeah, right.
I just don't really, I still have a trouble understanding how computer literate people, you know, people who were at least alive in some sense of the digital era, could fall. Like when any of us go onto a website that's clearly like a not a fake site, but like, you know, it's meant to be propagandist. You can tell that the website is, when it's called like, you know, the Virginian or not even, that's not even
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
When it's like, you know, the talker, you know, the big talker. And it's like, this website looks like shit. Like you can deduce that this is either clickbait or false or it's janky. But I'm surprised that so many people were so easily influenced by that kind of thing in terms of, you know, the 2020, but also this.
I also think this is, as always, I'm going to blame it all on social media, but like we have all of these conversations now with regularity on the podcast just and in real life that I think are proxy conversations, whether it's about conspiracy theories or the spread of, Trump's lies or news stories that undermine democracy. It's all about vaccine hesitancy. It's all about access, which is on Facebook, say solely and exclusively, because no one reads Twitter. This is all because of Facebook. And we keep spinning our wheels, understandably, because articles like this are so silly, but also a little disconcerting, because you're like, I don't want large swaths of maybe not large swaths, but I don't want any American to believe something this farcical. But I really shouldn't be mad at them, and I shouldn't be mad at the Post for picking it up. I should be mad at Facebook for weaponizing the spread of this kind of garbage and making it so easy to digest. And
you can be mad at the Post, though. The Post has a responsibility in this. There is some journalistic responsibility involved in narrating a story or writing a story while reporting on the actual facts of what's being said, while at the same time calling out that there is no justifiable evidence of any of this.
Perfectly fair.
And the New York Post does not do a great job of putting that there's no evidence of this at the top of their article. They do it at the very bottom when no one and people have stopped reading.
Yeah, when people stop reading.
It does also remind me of in the 2016 election. I remember this really pissing me off because it speaks to what Elliot was talking about, how, you know, when Hillary and Bernie were sort of in the primary together, and there was this one website that was very pro-Bernie, very anti-Hillary, and it was built to sort of look like a news site, and it was sort of like a liberal news site. It was made to come off, but it really was just propaganda for Bernie Sanders, and people would share articles from it, they would have numbers that would just be skewed because, you know, it would of course be skewed in favor of their opinion, not rather, you know, actual numbers. And I remember it just infuriated. I remember I was covering Bernie Sanders, the primary in Pennsylvania for Vice, and people would be showing me numbers from this website. And I'm like, well, this is a political website that is
not real.
Biased. It's not real. Yeah. It's, you know, these numbers aren't real, and they would believe it. And I'm thinking that this is a problem both on the left and the right. This is a huge problem on both sides. And Facebook is a large culprit of it because people would be sharing those articles where? On Facebook.
Facebook. Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also so boomer heavy too. It feels, that's what I mean, where I'm like, people but our
these were
age.
Kids. Like, these were kids our age. Yeah. Like Bernie Sanders supporters our age who are sharing these articles.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's across the board, not just boomers.
I think Elliot was saying that for something like this, this is probably, I would bet an article about kids using litter boxes is probably appealing to boomers across the country.
Only a 50, not to be ageist, but only someone maybe a little bit older to believe that a kid's going to go squat in a litter
box. Oh, you.
I mean, how funny is that, though? That's really funny.
It is very funny.
Oh, God.
I love anything furries.
I do, too. Have you ever met a furry?
So funny to me.
No.
I almost dated a furry. Kind
of... Oh, that's right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You a furry or just like a puppy play person?
He was a furry.
Oh, wow.
I dated a puppy play person, too. That was
do they come in the suit?
No.
Come in the suit? Well, they like to all say that they're not into, it's not a sexual thing for them, but it's a sexual thing for them. With the guy that in college, the kid who lived in the dorm room next door, he was like just coming out, was also kind of like a cool hipster skater dude, and I put together over time that he was a furry. It took me time because I had to kind of put
together
because I realized that like he would wear this like Country Bear Jamboree shirt that I thought was cute, but then he also had like a picture in his dorm room that was like a hot like chimp. And then like sheets, and then like
a hot chimp, furry.
Like a muscular chimp. Yeah, and then I was like, there's so many like anthropomorphic things in his clothing and his suit, and it all came together. And then eventually I put it together when MTV had that True Life I'm a Furry thing.
Is he on it?
He's not on it, but then I looked through his Facebook and found furry costumes.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. I'm gonna do it.
Not even joking.
Our guest today, so fun. Tona Tew, welcome.
Hi.
Hey.
You are having quite a moment. You're on ABC's Promised Land and Peacock's Angeline.
Yes.
It's really exciting.
That, of course, bears the question, have you met the real Angeline?
Wait, real quick. Like, should we explain what Angeline is?
Oh, good God.
Sorry, Tona. Alan, maybe, or Tona, you can explain Angeline.
Yeah.
You know better.
For sure. Angeline is a Los Angeles icon who is the original influencer. She is famous for being famous. In the 80s, she had about 200 billboards all over the city with just her name and a phone number with which to contact her and some salacious pictures.
She was like a video vixen, right? Music videos?
She started doing videos. She did a couple of films, a lot of TV appearances. She's anything that you want her to be. So she's just
she drives around Los Angeles in a pink Lamborghini Corvette. I used to see her every single day at the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf in Hollywood, where she would charge people $50 for a headshot from the trunk of her car.
Honestly, I'm charging $50 for a headshot now.
Brent thinks that's ridiculous. I think it's genius. Yeah. I think it is so smart.
It is genius.
I mean, I remember years ago, I was doing a show with my friend Brian, and we wanted Angeline on, and we met her at the Coffee Bean on Sunset, where we had to buy like $100 worth of stuff from the back of her trunk of her car. And she agreed to drive her car into the parking lot of the show as the entire audience was leaving so that they could buy stuff from the trunk of her car too. And everyone was so excited. It was probably the most fun an audience had leaving a show.
She created her own myth. That's what's genius about it. She created her own myth by essentially saying, I'm in demand, I'm worth your money. And so people were like, okay, like it is really thought provoking.
But if you think about it, I mean, what's really the difference between an Angeline and a Kim Kardashian?
Yeah,
you
know? Nothing.
There is none. No. Celebrity culture is creating desire and creating scarcity for this one singular product, which is the eye.
But the thing that's great about Angeline is that she didn't need that famous name or a sex tape or anything like that. All she needed was these mysterious billboards, which is why she's the mysterious LA billboard queen. Like, she just needed these mysterious billboards and for people to be like, what's that? And then to drive around, to literally just drive around in a pink car, and people would freak the fuck out. Now, Tona, you have, in what I love about in the show is that you age over the years. How much fun was it working on Angeline, first off?
It was a blast. I had a really good time. When I got the scripts, I fell in love with the story that they were creating, this idea that we get to construct whoever we are in this world, and we're not shackled to the narrative that we inherited or the given circumstances that we inherited, right?
Yeah.
And that's nothing different than what actors get to do and queer folk get to do all the time, right? Because we separate ourselves from our families, or maybe we don't like some of the circumstances that we're born into. So when I got to read that, I knew that I needed to be a part of the project, and getting the opportunity to see myself as a silver Tapatio daddy was
You had quite a transformation. They did. I mean, how long was the makeup process for you to like become old, and did it give you a complex into what could happen in your future?
I mean, I put it on my dating profile just to be like, invest now. But no, it was about an hour and a half.
Oh wow.
To do the whole face, and then we did some makeup on the arms for the close-ups.
Wait, I cut you off earlier. Did you meet Angeline?
Yeah, did you meet her?
Yeah,
so I have met her driving around, because I also was a big fan of hers, but I have never met her under a work context.
Really? Not even like she was involved with the show, right?
No.
So I'm not privy to what happened in pre-production. I am only, when I get brought onto a project, I usually just come in for my days and my work.
Yeah. She worked with giving her, her life story to the project, but she wasn't like a producer. Does that make sense?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I mean, she also did a podcast with you where she spoke about the show.
So I did an interview with Emmy Rossum and it was a very loving interview where both of us, we really fanned out on Angeline and how much we love Angeline and how she's the original influencer. And we said all these amazing things. And the show, when you watch the show, it's so queer. It's so campy. It's such a love letter to Angeline and who she is and like how a badass feminist she was. And well, the real Angeline then
was not a fan
and immediately was like, I need to talk on the record.
Yeah, she had some choice words. And I think honestly, because when you watch the show, she doesn't want anybody else to play her.
Yeah, no.
Of course.
You know? And so it is the most Angeline thing for her to come on and talk about the show in the way that she did. I think it was perfect.
But you and I were messaging.
I couldn't agree more, because we're talking about a vapid, ridiculous person, in my opinion. And you're, Alan, you're very generously ascribing all of these powerful, meaningful things. And of course she wouldn't give a fuck about that because that's not what matters. What matters is, where's my billboard, bitch? And she's not on a billboard for Peacock. So
I mean, it's so funny. She's mad. As soon as I got the whole Angeline thing, I literally messaged Tona immediately being like, oh girl, oh girl, oh girl.
I was so gooped and gagged that I was listening to the interview while I was showering on my way to another job. I was like, oh girl. And then she said, what?
It was, I mean, you have to listen to that interview, guys, because it is like,
yeah, plug it, Alan.
It is it's on the Parting Shot podcast that I do, but it is a wild, wild ride. And what's so amazing about it, what Tony and I were messaging about, was that it is kind of, this is, of course, is what she's going to do, because it helps the show. It helps her brand. It helps more people watch Angeline. It helps on so many levels.
It's really just fascinating, because it's like, the show did her such justice that even the real Angeline is performing just like the one in the show would.
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of a little meta in that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Life imitates art.
Yeah.
So wild. It's so, you're also on Promised Land on ABC, which is a big deal. It's like the first sort of like Latin sort of soap opera moment happening on primetime television.
Yeah, on ABC for sure. It was all Latina cast. It was just a blast to work on. And I had the beautiful opportunity to work some major legends in the Latina world, Cecilia Suarez, John. It was just it was a wild ride.
Yeah, that must be like, because that's primetime money. That ain't like, that's not like VH1. That is like primetime money. So like
Alan would like to look at your checking account. Yes, that's what he's getting to. Do you mind if you send?
I don't mind sending receipts as long as he's investing.
Yeah. It'll be an unofficial OnlyFans.
My Venmo is at Telazar. No, I'm just
No, but it's like, it's a big deal to have a show of that caliber on like such a big network. I mean, that's a big statement, I think, in a lot of ways. It's also just a fun soap opera, which I want more of those in prime time.
I mean, it was a blast. And I think that for me, acting is a lot of fun and I really enjoy it. The craft, whatever you want to call it. But oftentimes, my career up to this point, each of the characters that I have is expanding progress in some way. Vida was talking about the gentrification of Boyle Heights, and I really wanted to make a statement about what it means to be femme and also needing to protect yourself in a society like Boyle Heights.
Yeah.
So one of the dialogue that we had was like, well, why can't a femme person have facial hair? Right? Yeah. Or with Promised Land in particular, my approach or my in for this was, oh cool, we have a queer villain who was betrayed by his family. What happens to a person when they have internalized shame and have been betrayed and thus internalized said betrayal and become the betrayer themselves?
Yeah,
you know. And so it was really just a fun opportunity for me to expand what queer Latine-ness looks like on a major platform. On, like, we were in houses in Ohio, honey. We were
That's what I mean. I mean, the mom in Ohio is scared. She's scared when literally I have to teach my mother where to go to find VH1 to watch something that Michael made for Queen of Drag Race. My boyfriend Michael makes dresses for Queens of Drag. She literally has to be like, where do I go? What am I doing? I have to look up the number for Spectrum in St. Louis, Missouri. But she knows that ABC is Channel 2.
Oh my God. Yes, she does.
She knows that. But I mean, so your character is a villain, which, like, I feel like a lot of times, especially like queer film historian people will be like, we've always been, queer characters are always made out to be the bad guy who either dies in the end in a tragic way or like does something bad. I've always loved a gay villain. Like I know I learned that it was probably like a homophobic trope back in the day. Like that's what they did for a lot of characters, queer characters, queer
lesbian voting. Vampires.
Lesbian, right.
Yeah.
Transphobe.
Yes. Yeah. But I mean, I think it's fun when a queer character gets to be evil. Don't you?
I mean, listen, I personally love it because I get to do things that I can't do in real life.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved on like a Melrose Place. I was so pissed when that fag on Melrose Place never cut anyone in the back or never like didn't. I mean, he was always sort of just like,
wait, Melrose Place had a gay character?
Oh yeah, it was like the first gay kiss on television or something where they didn't even.
Yeah, that's right.
They didn't even kiss. They billed it like they were gonna kiss, but then they did this. They were like,
not
that. Yeah, you didn't quite see the kiss. I was pissed. And
I was more of a Party of Five ho, but
she still is in certain bathhouses.
No, I love a gay villain. Don't you? I think it's
fun. I think it was fun. I mean, I wish we had the opportunity to do more sinister stuff, but I think we had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, where are you from? Where are you from originally? You're from LA? Tell us about your background.
Yeah, I was born in Boyle Heights, a Memorial Hospital.
Oh, wow.
So just right outside. And weirdly enough, when I did Vida, we had a park scene and we filmed that park scene where I learned how to ride a bike.
Oh, wow. That's so Vida was just for our listeners, was a great series on Stars, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. And it I think it ended last year, 2 years ago.
I think season three aired 2020.
Oh, wow. So it was a pre-pandemic show.
But you know, those 2 years we all disassociated from.
Yeah, right. Yesterday. Basically yesterday. Yeah.
I mean, that must have meant a lot to be doing a show like that in the area that you were born and raised in. Like, that's kind of awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had a lot of fun serendipitous moments like that with my career.
Really?
Well, Vida was one example of that. And it was really great because we did a warehouse-esque, you know, Party of Ospenhof type of scene in the show. And Tanya Sriracha did a really great job of like showcasing what queer LA life looks like. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to a type of queer warehouse party like that here in LA, and somebody came up and was just like, "I'm so glad to see that you're actually one of us."
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
And meanwhile, I'm smoking a cigarette like, "Yeah, girl, yeah, say it."
Yeah, right. Yeah. Get out of my trailer.
No, not that. No.
Security.
I do want someone to do a show about queer life where it's just like me standing in the aisles at Gelson's, like snacking on food I haven't paid for yet. And I see,
salad bar.
And I see some sort of like dude who was a gay guy on a show, like on Grey's Anatomy the night before. And I'm like, "Yeah, he was on Grey's Anatomy the night before." And that's it. That's the whole scene.
That's actually
the show, is just little vignettes of me talking about gay people.
It'll be called Gelson's.
Yeah. Yeah.
How closely did you work with Tanya Sriracha? I know she's quite prolific as a writer, director, but also as a queer person. I knew her when she worked on Looking. Crossed paths. Did you work closely with her?
Yeah, she almost all of the castings that I've had up until this point have been weird stories. This one, I was working at Echo Theater Company in a play where I was the only Mexican drag queen at a Filipino ladyboy massage parlor.
Oh my God, the only one?
The only one. She's trying to fit in with her Calabayan sisters. And Tanya came to the night before closing and was just there watching a couple of her friends who were in the play. Mm. And she messaged me on Instagram and said that she wrote me a part.
Oh, wow. Oh my God.
Yeah. And you know, of course, like you hear those things and I'm like, okay, sure. What casting couch am I going to go to?
Yeah.
But yeah, lo and behold, you know, I did the one scene and she liked it and wrote me into a larger role and then eventually turned into three seasons of working with her.
That's great.
She's fantastic. What I love about her is that her stories really push progress forward.
Mm-hmm.
She's incredibly unapologetic.
Yeah.
And she's a woman in her power. Like, you know, she's unafraid. And I feel like a lot of women get this rap about, like, I don't know, men with soft egos. But I love someone who's willing to champion and walk the walk and talk the talk.
Mm-hmm. Who's also just does it in a cool way. You know what I mean? Like, who does it in sort of, like, I remember when Vida got canceled, it was like a big uproar. People were pissed that it was taken off the air.
Yeah, I don't think I ever saw a show like that. And that was something that where I saw myself in that show.
That's the show that needs to be on ABC. Someone called Disney.
Period.
Mm-hmm. Well, no. Yeah. So, Tony, you, two things I want to talk to you about. Learn the words. At the beginning of the pandemic, this is where I first learned of you, was from the words. And then, of course, you know, mutual friends or whatever. But, like, you did at the beginning of the pandemic, it was their first, I think it was Tony's first, Tony Soto, he's past guest on
their first Zoom.
First Zoom, yeah. And you did an amazing sort of like, I don't even know how to explain what you did virtually with your performance, but like the camera moved, like you walked through your apartment. And
we should say what Learn the Words is.
Oh, Learn the Words is a lip sync show here in Los Angeles that the tagline is, "Why should drag queens have all the fun?" So a bunch of queer.
And they did it on, they did it on Zoom at the beginning of the pandemic, which was kind of a godsend because it was the chaos of everything. It was a really fun communal thing. And I didn't know you at the time, but you did the walkthrough video.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so Tony, so I had done Learn the Words Bitch since probably its inception. Mm-hmm. Adam Silver
love
and
Tony
created the show, and Adam and I did a play together in 2015. Mm-hmm. So I just, it was always an outlet for me. For those of you who don't know what Akbar is, it's like a little safe haven for queers on the East Side to just come together and
yeah.
let our freak flags fly and do the disco, do some disco, you know? But yeah, so Tony reached out to me and was just like, hey sis, we're going to try this new thing. If you want to do it, come through. It's not going to be, it's like volunteer work, you know what? So I was like, all right, girl, I have nothing else going on. I actually was on the set of Angeline the day that they announced that the city was shutting down.
Oh, wow. Oh, right.
It's and
right.
My face, like the Vida billboard season 3 was coming out in May.
Yeah.
So our faces were all over the city. No one could see them.
Oh.
So for me, I felt so like I've been working at this career and building it and fostering it. And so I was like, oh, here we go. It's going to take off. And then naturally the pandemic happened. Yeah. So when Tony reached out, I was like, I need to do something creative because my soul is dying.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a blast.
Creative. I don't know if I was the judge that night, but I was watching and it was a lot of fun. Did you win? I think you won even.
I won.
I hope it's archived somewhere because people should be able to see that. That was a good one.
I think it might be on my Instagram.
Oh, well, there you go. Go to your Instagram. Well, that brings up my last question is your name. So you go, you're like a Madonna. You're like a Cher. You're like a, who's another one name person? I don't know.
Zendaya.
Zendaya.
Angeline.
Angeline is going. So
Valentina.
How did you decide to like go by just Tonatiuh?
So, When I first grew up, I was born in East LA, right, in Boyle Heights. And so everyone there knew spoke Spanish, so they had no problem pronouncing Tonatiuh. But when my mom remarried, we moved to West Covina. And the first day of fourth grade, my teacher was trying to say my name, which she couldn't. And then she looks at my last name, which is Elisa Ravaz.
Oh,
and
wow.
So she couldn't say that either.
Yeah.
And so she's like, who the hell is this? So I raised my hand and she said, you know, well, what am I going to call you? Because this is impossible.
Yeah.
So in that moment, I colonized myself and I changed my name to Matt. And I went by Matt for almost for 8 years of my life, pulled it out of the air.
Wow.
And I even made my family change it. And so when I got to high school, I changed it back to Tona. And then when I got to college, I changed it back to Tonatiuh. And when I decided to be to commit to being an artist fully.
Yeah.
Tonatiuh Elisa Ravaz was just a lot, a name.
Yeah.
So I just kind of decided to stay with Tonatiuh.
I do think it's funny that your teacher refused, even though like all it takes is like two times before you can say it very easily. Tonatiuh, like that's it. Like,
yeah. And your friends call you Tona, right?
It both, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
so like,
funny. It's like, no, just learn his name. That's his name.
Tona? Be the easier.
But even on sets, I mean, not so much anymore, but when, you know, in different film sets, there are people who just refuse, like, oh, can I call you T? Can I call you Tony? Can I, like, asking me to make their lives easier,
right.
My entire identity. How can you serve me?
Right. Let me make this easier for me.
Make yourself more accountable to me.
That's so, and what do you say in those situations? Like, I mean,
it might call all those people Matt. Call them Matt.
Yeah, call
them one of them.
All these Matts are over here. I've said different things in different places depending on the energy that someone brings to me.
Yeah.
So sometimes I'll be a little cheeky. I never get offended if people ask me how to say my name. That's not an offensive thing. But when somebody isn't even willing to try.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's when one time I was like, well, the director knows my name and the writer knows my name and the producers know my name. But the makeup artist doesn't want to know my name. The PA doesn't want to learn my name. Like, that's really like, do you not? I learned your name.
Right. It's not that big of an ask to know another person's name who you're going to be working with in some capacity.
Also, the fact that you said that you feel their energy, which I think is a really important thing, because like there, I will admit there are some times where you get in situations where like you earnestly do try to like pronounce something a right way or do something the correct way. And then someone comes at you when you are making an attempt to try to do something in an affirming way. And so it's nice that you say that, like, if their energy is good and they're trying to do something good, then you give that to them. You know, you're nice.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not a perfect person by any means. And so I want to extend that same type of gratitude or generosity is the word to another human being. But when someone's coming to try it, like, you know.
Yeah.
Well, listen, you haven't witnessed someone called Brett. Oh. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, that's the only time I become physically abusive with
it's this. Real
my name my name is really easy, but because of the H, people fuck it up all the time. They don't know no one knows what to do with the H. It's a very scary H to them.
Helen.
Yeah, I say call him Helen.
Yeah, I get Alan a lot. I don't mind Alan. I'm fine with just
Alan. Well, yeah, that's what we call you, Alan. We call you Alan. Yeah,
I mean, the name is H. Alan. And people like message me about that, be like, so do they, because they call you Alan. So are you H. Alan or are you Alan? And I'm like, no, I'm H. Alan, but people can call me Alan. You can call me Alan. Like, it's
Well, you'll always be Alan to me.
Yeah. It's one of those things. Well, this has been so much fun. Where can people follow you on the interwebs?
Yeah, so you can follow me on all socials with I am Donatiuh. That's TONATIUH.
And watch Angeline, because I mean, I kind of want to post the picture you posted of you in the old makeup as you for this episode, because it is.
Oh, it's on his Instagram.
Yeah, it's for on. Sure. I know, but I want to post it on our Instagram, Elliot.
Oh yes, yes.
Well, you can't have it.
Yeah, I'll do it before and after. Yeah, I'll.
Yeah, we have a twink and twas.
I'm gonna do the thirstiest photo of you next to the oldest photo of you. That's what I'll do. I'll do it side by side. It'll be wonderful. Like Thank that. You so much, Donatiuh.
Thanks. Yeah, Thank pleasure. You. Thanks.
And another thing.
So I've been watching the Real World Homecoming, I believe it's called.
Have you been watching or jerking off to it?
Yeah, good question.
Why would I be jerking off to it?
Because of Danny, who we're talking about.
Oh, no. Well, that was, I mean, okay, so I'm watching it.
If you recall from a recent episode, Elliot never masturbates. He thinks it's incredibly gauche.
No, I have to explain. So first and foremost, I'm watching The Real World Homecoming. Mm-hmm. They are now doing the New Orleans season, which had Danny Roberts, and we'll talk about him in a second.
Right.
But they've done a few seasons. They did New York, they did LA.
But then Miami?
Come on, do Miami.
I need Miami.
Me too.
But I that one.
But they're doing New Orleans, which
Miami has a line I say all the time. I'm sorry. I have to. The Dan's line was it Dan who's like, it yes. wasn't yours to open, you stupid bitch. And I,
oh, I remember that line.
That sentence is in my head at least weekly.
Yeah.
It's awful. Awful. What a guy.
Yeah.
I think she called him a faggot either before or after that.
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah. I'm like, okay.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
But yeah, Danny was on The Real World New Orleans. He was even though it was a reality show, he was openly gay. He seemed to have like no shame about it. He was gorgeous, like stunning, but also had a very like chill vibe about
chill
him.
Mask and vibe, I think which hadn't been like represented on TV very much at all.
And he was dating a military person who
he was dating a military
Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Yeah.
During Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah.
And so in watching the show now, it's so nice to. The reason that I love this show, I didn't care for the LA reunion, but the New York and the New Orleans one are great because it's so fun to watch a reality show about like adults. Like they're not chasing.
They're not screaming, you mean, at each
other.
They're
not screaming. Yeah. It's like calm. And it's really just interesting to watch. But he, of course, is particularly.
Did you hear Danny Pellegrino's interview with Danny?
No,
not yet.
Oh, it's I knew great. Interviewed him. It's great. Yeah,
I got to watch
recently. That's on the Everything Iconic podcast.
Yeah, Danny is fantastic. Two-time guest. Yeah, of your
that's
making
right.
Course. So I was actually at a party. So we've obviously talked about Danny several times on the podcast because he really is kind of like, you know, something of an iconic gay figure, quite frankly, on TV.
He never really did it for me. I see why he's gorgeous, but he never really was like, I never was obsessed with him in a sexual way, like so many gay friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you were too busy reading books, but I saw a friend at a party recently and she was telling me all about this season of what's it called, Elliot? Real World Homecoming. Homecoming. That's it. And you know, I was reminiscing with her because I found some episodes of Real World New Orleans, the original, that are, of course, on YouTube. And I watched a couple. I watched like the first season, the first episode from that season. And it is so funny. Again, it's only 20 years ago, I guess 22 years ago, but it's so dramatic. You know, Danny enters the house and he goes, I have a secret. I'm not telling you. And everyone's like, what is it? What is it? He's like, I can't tell you. And then like eventually he's like, I'm gay. And it's so overdone. And I mean, but understandably, because I mean, that was really was a different era. And the other thing that, you know, sort of when you reflect back, think about yourself watching this when you were in high school, was the storyline that he had with the military guy that was like so tortured.
And that blew me away. It was, I was obsessed with watching the episodes where he visited, because it was, he seemed hot. The mystery man seemed hotter to me than Danny.
So I'll tease. I heard from my friend who watched Homecoming that they showed the military guy in real life, and he is not hot.
He's like Danny then.
Well, it's not that he's not. It's not that he's not hot. It's that he has returned. He returns onto the show, and he looks like a burlesque performer, like a male burlesque performer, like, or maybe like a female, like kind of like a mustachioed lady kind of thing, like where it's like, oh wow, he's like, he's fully transformed, like he's he's living it.
Well, so just so you know, Elliot, we support mustachioed ladies on this podcast. Sorry,
I just mean it's like, it's not the, I guess it's not like fantasy soldier that Alan had, that I also had too.
He seemed sort of like, there was, I don't know.
He was just terrified.
So
yeah, and also, I mean, in that moment, it was so wild to also think back what that transposed to us as like closeted or not closeted queer kids back then, that like this guy had to be, have his face blurred out. Like,
what year was that? I forget.
99, 2000,
I think. But,
sorry, the point I was getting to was that, again, as an adult, when you look back on, you know, two 19-year-olds having this tortured love affair, you're like, oh, they had known each other for like 2 months before this.
Yeah.
And yet I was like, oh, they're going to get married and they'll spend their lives together. And they're so tortured. But and then also, like in reality, you're like, oh, they barely knew each other. And they probably hooked up like 4 times. And then Danny left to do Real World. You know?
Think about how wild that is, though, to like agree to do that in that era. Mm-hmm. Like that's insane.
Very much
about.
Even now on the show, Danny's like, I can't, Danny almost like regrets it. He's like, I can't believe we did that. He even says like, I didn't think about don't ask, don't tell. He's very, he's very eloquent and like, seems very self-realized. He's now a father. He's a divorce. I think he got married twice or once, but he got divorced. He adopted his daughter. He lives in Vermont. He's 44. He calls himself a recluse. He's HIV positive and talks about that. He's he created a message board. He talks about how he like did a failed message board, but he tried, you know, where gay guys could talk to each other because there wasn't a safe outlet that was called Country to Concrete. So people in smaller places could talk.
He's just
I mean, everybody on the show is really interesting to listen to, except Julie, who is a monster.
Which one's Julie?
Was the Mormon one, Alan.
The Mormon.
Oh, is she a monster now?
A monster.
Well, I always liked her on that show.
I wouldn't like her now. You wouldn't like her now.
Wait, and explain that though. Why is she a monster?
Because it's very quickly revealed that she said some terrible things about Danny that were homophobic. She said terrible things about Melissa. She threw people under the bus so she could get like speaking gigs, and really chased fame as well. And is just she's genuinely like a kind of lunatic where you're like, she's trying to act it up for TV, but they catch her saying that to her husband on the phone. She's a monster.
She says terrible things about them years ago or recently during the shooting of Homestead or whatever it's called.
Homecoming.
She says stuff about them like after the show, but like took speaking engagements out, like took money out of their pockets. And did so in a way that was just like really cunning and unnecessary.
Who is hiring Julie to come to their university to get a motivational speech?
But they all did. Pedro Zamora did. They all had speaking engagements at colleges.
It was a big deal. They became sort of like.
But who would do it now? Like that's what I'm saying. Like who's
no one?
Like,
yeah.
Oh no, they're sorry. They're talking at the past.
Okay. All right. So they're talking about long ago.
Yeah.
She said mean things. Okay. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just shitty, and she never. It's like, you know, basically. I mean, it all comes to roost,
and she never apologized on the show on Homecoming.
She apologizes now, but it takes Homestead. A lot of like. Homestead, Homecoming. I'm confused now. Yellowstone. No, she's
with Kevin Costner.
She's just truly like, she is truly a monster, and like is she's an ex-Mormon now. She's like a sex positive yoga. But she's a lunatic, and you
I'm
see
here
her.
For that journey though.
And she that's a fun journey.
She is the sort of punching bag, but like by choice, she makes herself the punching bag to say every possible thing wrong that you could possibly say in 2022.
Honestly,
she says
that's what makes great reality TV. Someone who's just. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, I know, it's great.
Not everyone needs a Danny Kumbaya moment. Let's all hold hands and talk about living in the wilderness.
And the other thing I was going to say is I actually know someone who converted from Mormonism to Judaism, but he's actually really boring. So
yeah,
I don't really talk about him very much.
Well, for what it's worth, I think if you are of the Danny era, it's definitely worth a watch.
Yeah. And listen to Danny Pellegrino's checks. It's really, it's really good.
Yeah, he's really held. He really is a good example of like coming out, being unapologetic about it, and like making his way through it, and coming, really emerging as an adult with a kid, and
making his
way
through it until he becomes a raging alcoholic in Vermont, reclusive alcoholic in Vermont.
Well, we shouldn't laugh at that.
What would your aunt say?
Brent, what would your Aunt Ramona say about something she heard on today's podcast?
What was the name of the gubernatorial candidate who made the tweet about furries? I need a vote for them.
Yeah, I like how you purposely did not use her name. I feel like you did it on purpose.
I did because they didn't write it down. I didn't need to give them too much attention.
I know,
attention.
I love it. My Aunt Joanne would say, you know, isn't your father a furry? And I would say, no, he's just hairy.
There you go.
We don't
mind on the podcast when Lair takes his shirt off. I'll say that much. Go ahead.
How about Aunt Anne?
My Aunt Anne would probably say the same thing. She would say, I've been a furry for years while I shave your Uncle Ray's back.
Oh, good. Both of your aunts were very aligned today.
Yeah.
Yes, they were. Geniuses. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I am Brent Sullivan.
And I am H. Allen Scott.
And you can find Alan at instagram.com/sadiefines. You can find me at instagram.com/mrbrentsullivan. And you can find Elliot at onlyfans.com/daddylongleg.
He can wrap it around his shoulder.